Reed Martin, we've been updating all the great books Abridged. We've been revisiting our scripts to make them contemporary and up to date. And I love our job. We've got one of the best jobs in the world, making people laugh. But now it feels, given everything that's going on in the world, it feels like this is a really important job, all of a sudden, making people laugh. Would you agree with that?
I would. But somebody needs to tell my wife, Jane, that, because I can't make her laugh.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 960, Funny to Us. Our tour of all the great books Abridged continues this week in Ohio and Pennsylvania, and as my fellow RSC Artistic Director Reed Martin and I were updating this and several of our other scripts, we started talking, as we frequently do, about the things that make us, and sometimes only us, laugh. What I love about that reference to your bride, Jane Martin, our executive director, general manager for the Reduced Shakespeare Company, is that reminds me of the old joke. The way we've always talked about Jane is the way we test all of our jokes. If she doesn't laugh, we know it's going to kill.
That's absolutely true. I'm sure I've told this story before, but when we were running the Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged for a year in London at the Arts Theatre in 92, 93, before it went into the Criterion, and we were writing our Complete History of America Abridged, which we were going to premiere as soon as we got back to the United States, Jane sat in the bath and I read her the Complete History of America Abridged from beginning to laugh. I mean, from beginning to end, not one laugh throughout. And she would just, she'd nod, oh yeah, and then she'd shake her head, and then, and I finished, Jane, you didn't laugh once. And she said, well, I felt like I was listening to The Mortgage. So, yeah.
Well, that's a good, but yeah, that's a whole different conversation of why people go into the arts. You know, if you're listening to The Mortgage every time you go, hey, should I do this play or not? Not sure. Should I paint this landscape? I'm not sure these are the reasons why one does the things that one does. Why artists do the things what they do.
Exactly right. Things that are, we thought were funny, funny to us, but we turned out to be the only ones. There was a thing I can't remember. It seemed like it was definitely Adam and me, and I think it was you as well. Does this ring a bell? Where in one of the shows we'd be getting into a fight, you know, amongst ourselves, the way the scripts break down, and then stop in the middle of it and turn to the audience, go, "What are you looking at?" which we thought was hilarious. It was very outside the box, sort of. You know, of course they're looking at us. They're the audience. But just the idea of that tickled us immensely. But we were the only one. So, yeah, we had a big argument in the audience. What are you looking at? And then they had no response at all because they're looking at us.
You're the actors on stage. Who else are we supposed to look at? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that reminds me of the thing we always do. It's bawdy and inappropriate. We don't do it on stage so much. Maybe we've done it in one script where we say, oh my God, I just blanked on the word. What's the word? What's the word we always say? Oh my God. You know, what? Dirty word. What? Dirty word. What? Dirty word. You know what I'm saying? Oh shit.
Oh yes, yes, yes. Yeah, we do it with croak.
Isn't it?
Oh God, I know exactly where you're talking about. This is brilliant podcasting.
I know. This is where my editing chops come to
play. Thank God.
Oh well. If we think about it, we can go back for it. One of the things that struck me about this topic of what is funny to us is that I think that it has changed for me over the years, or maybe I've only just become aware and conscious of it. Like some of my favorite laughs, and I was thinking about this because we're talking about that we may bring the Completely Hollywood show back for touring in a couple of years. One of my favorite laughs of all the ones we've written is simply the appearance of Dominic's character in white, because he's the man, and we keep referring to the man in white, and we haven't referred to him in about 20 minutes, and suddenly Dom steps on stage all dressed in white, and the whole audience laughs hysterically because this is a moment that has paid off, and he doesn't say a thing. It's one of my favorite moments because it shows that the audience is really paying attention to the narrative.
Yeah. And
that's really rewarding for me because we write typically these vaudevilles where sketch, blackout. That's not quite strictly true, but it's always as we continue to write more extended, lengthy, full length narratives, that idea of the audience laughing at not just jokes and punchlines, but twists in the narrative or choices the characters make, that has become enormously rewarding to me.
Well, it's such a fun moment because I think it combines, I think we talk about the man in white, and we also talk about somebody else who Dominic turns out to be, and turns out to be the man in white, but the audience doesn't would have no way of knowing that that's going to end up being the same guy. And Dominic walks out and, oh gosh, yes, I see what you all were doing.
You're right. It's the payoff to not just one, but two running gags.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, yeah. God, we're geniuses.
I remember, funny to us, I was thinking about this the other day, when Bernard Levin, the Dean of London Theatre Critics, came to see us in London, and I think our publicist at the time reached out to us and said, now, I understand Bernard Levin wants to have lunch with you. It's probably a mistake. So just play along. But anyway, he'd seen the show and he loved it. So I don't think we had that publicist very long after that. But we went out to lunch and we were writing The Complete History of America. And we were talking about it and said, he said, what's the next thing you're working on? Well, we're doing this and we're trying to kind of figure out how to pitch it. And he gave us the best advice for anybody doing anything, but in terms of comedy, he said, well, you can't try to guess what the audience is going to find funny. You have to write what's funny to you.
Yeah.
And if it's funny to you, it's going to be funny to a lot of other people. And, you know, and of course, if it isn't funny, they're not going to laugh, and you'll know that. But to try to figure out what somebody else thinks is funny and write to that, that's a losing game, right? And I recently saw I think the CBC did a history of the Second City, and Joe Flaherty, the guy from SCTV, who I think passed fairly recently, but he was talking about, you also can't write stuff as, oh, I don't think this is very funny, but the audience will love it.
Right.
That way disaster lies. So funny to us is what you have to write if you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
You know,
you have to make yourself laugh first.
Yeah. And if you're a comedian, other people will find it funny. If there's a bunch of stuff that's funny to you and nobody else laughs, you probably shouldn't be doing comedy.
Well, and that's the thing, too. We frequently jot this down in our scripts when we're rehearsing them, going, is this line funny or is it merely FTU? Funny right. to us. And a lot of times it's only FTU and we cut it. But we think of all these dead jokes fondly.
Yeah. The Mayflower Compact was funny to us when we were writing The History of America. I thought it'd be hilarious if the Pilgrims came out and somebody had, you know, a little mirror and a powder puff and they were powdering their nose. And what is that? It's the Mayflower Compact. That sound you just heard was the audience reaction at the time, too. Yeah, that lasted exactly one show.
Yeah. Well, and but sometimes we write lines and the lines themselves get a laugh. Like like in Comedy of Hamlet, a prequel, the king is talking about how young Hamlet can figure out how to get a job here in the castle. He says, come on, you're smart as a whip. I'm sure I can get you an internship. And I thought that line was just leading up to the setup for thou couldst assist the royal beekeeper. The royal beekeeper, thou couldst assist, help count the colony. Two bees or not two bees? That's your suggestion? And so I thought, I'm sure I could get you an internship, was just a setup line on the way to that punchline. Turns out, getting the King Hamlet offering his son, the Danish Prince of Denmark, an internship is also a funny line in a way I never anticipated until I said it out loud in front of people.
Well, yeah, and it's binary, right? They will either laugh or they will not.
Yeah.
And the audience will let you know if it's funny. And we're not gluttons for punishment. If they don't laugh, and that's the only reason it's there, we're going to get rid of it. I'm in the midst of right now directing a production of Blythe Spirit, and was telling the cast, there's lots of funny bits we've come up with, and we look at the text, you know, and sort of come up with stuff and physical business. And I go, now some of this we're going to think is hilarious, and the audience will tell us it is. And other bits of it we think is hilarious, and the audience will not respond at all, and we'll get rid of it. There's stuff that will be funny to us. Sometimes, in rehearsal or when we're writing, this is RSE stuff too. Sometimes we just laugh at something because it's new, right? We're surprised, but it turns out it's not funny except in the situation of us, because we've been working on, or we've been doing a scene again and again and again and again, and we say something different. Oh, that's hilarious. No, it's just different and it surprises us, but it's not funny. In the same way that lots of stuff, you rehearse it long enough, it doesn't seem funny at all.
Right.
So tired of it.
Yeah.
But it's funny. And in a way, it's funny because you forget that you're trying to be funny.
Yeah.
You're just trying to be true to the text, and then it's funny.
Hello. As far as I know, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? The spring tour of our updated version of All the Great Books Abridged continues this week with performances in Elyria, Ohio, and Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, and then on May 16th and 17th in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Reed Martin, talking about how we accidentally came up with one of the biggest laughs in All the Great Books Abridged. One of the biggest laughs in that show came long after we'd started performing it. And in fact, it was during the fight call for the Three Musketeers, Mousketeers confusion, where Croak comes out and says, "We're the Three Mousketeers." And it was just the fight call. And I was just messing around. And I said, "It's Musketeers, dumbass." And Croak, similarly just messing around and improvising, went, "It's pronounced Dumas," which is smart and brilliant and funny. And it's one of the biggest laughs in the show. And it just came to us when we were messing around during fight call, months, maybe years after we had already written, in air quotes, that show.
Yeah. And I mean, that sort of gets to a thing too, about the way a lot of good comedy is created. It's just people in a room having fun, goofing around and trying to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of, you know, they talk about the writer's room, you know, and riffing on ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just doing stuff that I know how I can make Austin laugh. I'll do this. Or, you know, I know, oh, this will crack up Croak. You go, oh, well, let's try it. And I know we've said this before, too, but whether something's funny or not, we used to spend a lot of time debating early on when we were writing together. And that's a losing game. I mean, yes, if you're only going to do one performance of a show, I guess it's more important. But for us, we're going to do hundreds or thousands of performances. Don't have to argue whether it's funny. We'll try it. It's like a stand-up comedian, right?
Yeah.
They're working on their own, but you're going to stand, was this funny? I don't know. Let's go do a set somewhere and the audience will laugh or they won't.
Well, and this is the other thing, too, that you learn by doing the show night after night. And trying to figure out the story that you're telling, not all laughs are created equal. And, you know, we try to give all of our new actors the freedom to make the roles their own and to change lines if it's not coming out of their mouths quite exactly the way it came out of my mouth, for instance, or yours mouth. But sometimes we'll get really funny actors adding bits and killing the momentum that we already scripted in and directed in, where we're building to this punchline right here. And if we do all these jokes on the setup, that laugh is not going to get the big laugh it's supposed to get. And we've killed the sort of momentum of the overall text. So, I mean, and you and I have to figure this out, too, when we're going, oh, this is really funny. Yeah, but it gets in the way of the other laugh that we're working towards. And that only comes from experience and needing to be ruthless, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes these little laughs break, for want of a better term, the comic tension on the way to the big laugh.
Right.
Right. It's not that what the little things aren't funny, but yeah, it's what you say. They can destroy the big laugh that you're going for at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes what's delightful is you find a laugh, what you think is the punchline. And then in performance, we figure out, oh, so that got the big laugh. Oh, and now I can comment, I can say another thing that will get another laugh that to top that previous laugh, or at least to carry it. And you realize, oh, I wrote a moment that is now getting us three great laughs in that moment. And it feels really right and true. And now we can start the engine and get on the road to the next moment that we're building towards.
Or like we'll write something and, you know, we were compiling our changes that we made to the America show this last fall so that it can be republished with updates. And, you know, I look at what we wrote and then we performed it and you said, well, here's where the laugh is. So yeah, we need these two lines before, but we don't need the two lines before that. They're not funny. We can get the joke anyway. So, something might be funny to us, but we can get to it in a more simple, direct way. And that's part of the craft as well.
That has probably been my greatest contribution to the two or three world premiere productions of plays that I've acted in that I didn't write or have anything else to do with. I was just, in air quotes, the actor. Because I have this experience with the Reduced Shakespeare Company, I'm able to say, you know what, you're overthinking your setup. I think you've set it up, and now you're explaining the joke before you've even said the punchline. Just cut these setups. Let's bring the punchline up several lines. I think you'll get the same laugh, and then you will have not wasted anybody's time and still get the same laugh. Yeah. And that's probably where I'm most useful.
Well, cutting oneself, you know, cutting your own work is such a great skill to have. You and I were talking earlier today, this production of Blythe Spirit that I'm directing. And I had seen, 6 months ago, a production of Blythe Spirit that they had made zero cuts to the original script. Mm. And it was 3 hours long with two intermissions. And it's like people's attention spans have changed. And I was very fortunate. I found a production, a television production from the 50s that Noel Coward himself was in and had edited himself, and it ran an hour and 15 minutes. Right. Perfect. And so, but I took the original published play and was comparing it to this, you know, TV production on YouTube, and like manually, you know, noting the cuts and saying, oh, here's how Noel Coward cuts his own work. Yeah. And I said to Jane, I go, this is remarkable. Not that we're Noel Coward in any way, but it's remarkable. I can see why he cut all these things that he cut, right? You don't really need it, or this is a distraction, or, you know, for whatever reason, but it's a great exercise.
Well, you say we're not Noel Coward. I was briefly Noel Coward for one song in the Complete Millennium Musical Abridged.
It's true. You were often Coward.
Right. The Fowell Coward.
Yes.
Was that film, that TV production, is that with Lauren Bacall as Elvira?
Yes, and Claudette Colbert as Ruth.
Yeah, that's great casting. That's fantastic casting.
What things do you remember from our 10 or 11 RSC shows that we were convinced were going to be funny and ended up we were the only ones?
It's interesting. You know, I think we've talked about this. I can't remember them. Because if they were funny, we would have kept them or repurposed them in something else.
Yeah. Well, going back to the comedy of Hamlet, there's a very fun patter song, the vassal from the castle thing.
Yeah.
That's very good in the first act. And I had said to you while we were workshopping, oh, we need to reprise this at the end of the show. And so you worked really hard and put something together, and we did it. And we came back to it as we were rehearsing it to take it to MRT a few months ago. And I said, I don't know if you're going to like, but I think we should cut it. Because it didn't top it, and it slowed us down getting to the finish. So that's something that I thought would be maybe not fun, maybe not funny, but fun to reprise it because it was so good. And no, it wasn't.
Well, and that wasn't a hard cut. It was sort of a big swing, but you're right. It wasn't funnier than the first time we did it. It only added one line that was new, which we have put somewhere else. And in fact, it enabled us to tie the prequel narrative of Hamlet and Ophelia even closer and tighter to their relationship in Shakespeare's play, and in a fraction of the time, in three lines instead of a page and a half of dialogue. So it's a stronger and shorter moment, and that's one of the other things that delights me and is incredibly funny to me in Comedy of Hamlet is this, going back to this idea of the audience. It's great when the audience laughs, but when they're gasping or making noises at turns in the narrative, there's Ophelia finds out some information at the end of the Comedy of Hamlet, a prequel, that destroys her, and she's about to tell Hamlet, share that secret with Hamlet, and she decides not to. And more than once, I've heard audience members go, oh, no, no. Like, no, they want Ophelia to share the secret with Hamlet. They want Ophelia to have a happy ending, and they're upset when she doesn't, which is so delightful to me that they're so invested in not only the story of what we're telling, but in Ophelia, and more selfishly, my ridiculous performance as teenage Ophelia, that they're so invested, they're making involuntary noises in the audience. That's not funny to me, but it's enormously satisfying to me.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, the word we couldn't think of earlier, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Reed Martin's and my RSE scripts are being updated even as we speak and are available for purchase and licensing at BroadwayPlayPublishing.com. Send us your updates via email to feedback@ReducedShakespeare.com. Or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or visit my website, TheShakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to Comic Idiot, it's pronounced Genius, Matthew Croak. Web services by Ginger Power Limited. Music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Rebecca O'Neill. No reason. It's just random. Special thanks to Weird Al Yankovic, who's funny to us and millions of others. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 960 2880th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Balmy.
Sorry?
Balmy.
What?
Balmy, Reed.
No, Austin. No.
Balmy. I figured
the weather.
It out.
Nice weather. It's balmy. What? Balmy. What? Balmy. No.
Yeah.
20 minutes later.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less.